It's a non-Celtics mailbag. Everything from TikTok to Greek food to good guys versus bad guys. It's the Monday Locked On Celtics podcast. Millie's, let's go. Rainy J's back with the vengeance. Back. All the real Celtics fans in attendance. This the truth like 34. This like walking in the garden when you hear the roars. Crowd goes crazy, most in-depth coverage on the daily, mainly podcast royalty, the content kings. When you talking about the franchise with 17 rings, focus like Danny at the deadline, global with it, got a local feel like the red line, the blue line, the green line, play it in between time. I'ma throw my Seas jersey on in the meantime and press play. When the F's done, I can't wait until the next day, trying to stay in tune with the Seas, that's the best way. Melly. Shout out to everybody who's watching me doing this first segment on the Locked On Celtics Instagram, doing an Instagram live for segment one. Follow the podcast on Locked On Celtics on Instagram. It's very simple. I'm John Corrales of MassLive.com. I cover the team when they play, if they resume playing again. Don't know what the hell is happening in this crazy pandemic life we live. But for now, we're waiting, and I'm doing things like this, a mailbag, which is non-Celtics questions. So I figured this could be a chance to have some fun, you know, really keep it light, get weird if you want to get weird, maybe get to know me a little bit better. Whatever it is, you know, I figured fire away. We don't really have much news other than Marcus Smart came out and said, talked a little bit about his COVID-19 diagnosis, which is, you know, he's asymptomatic. And the message that he sent was simple. He's a young guy who's asymptomatic, who didn't know that he had it, who was surprised to find out that he had it. And the message is for other young people who are in his generation, in your 20s, and you don't feel like you have anything, you're asymptomatic, you might still have it. And you still see people out there playing basketball. You still see people out there congregating in places. I drove by Kelly's Roast Beef the other day just to go out for a drive. And there are people standing shoulder to shoulder waiting for roast beef sandwiches and whatever, onion rings. Don't do that. Keep your distance. Do the social distancing thing. I'm not saying don't go to Kelly's Roast Beef and get your takeout. Go ahead and do that. But like, be smart about it. And that's what Marcus Smart was talking about. Let's just be smart. Because if you're not, you become a spreader. And then that takes away a lot of the things that you're trying to do. And, you know, frankly, what's going to end up happening? We're going to end up getting tighter and tighter and tighter restrictions. And all of this, oh, I'm good. It's not a big deal. You're going to cost everybody their summer. July is going to come around. August is going to come around. You're going to want to go to the beach. You're going to want to do these things. And what's going to end up happening? We're going to get these government mandates that are going to be shelter in place because people won't listen. And so we've got to really work together. That's all I'm saying. We got to work together to stop this so we can mitigate it, so we can get past it. Because otherwise, we're not going to get our sports back. You're not going to get your lives back. It's just not going to work out. And so that's Marcus Smart's message. That's everybody's message at this point. So that's the serious portion of the show. Now to the questions, like I said, non-Celtics questions. Let's see what people came up with. I'm going to start with that. Yanni Walks. How difficult is it to produce content when there's nothing new happening in the NBA? Well, you get things like this. It's not easy. It's not easy. Like, we can figure things out. And as people on the Instagram Live heard just a few moments ago, I've got a plan for the podcast that I think I can do that'll carry us through probably the next 2-3 months. And as news is sprinkled in, we can work that stuff in as well. But with no basketball to talk about, we've got to come up with other plans. And so I feel good about the podcast making it through. But you know, part of that plan is, you know, a little bit of luck because the Celtics are who they are. Then the Celtics are a team that has a lot to talk about. You just got to go back through time. And eventually, you're going to, there's a lot to talk about. So I think basketball-wise, for my full-time job at Mass Live, that's going to be a little bit more of a challenge. It's going to be a little bit more difficult to figure out how we're going to fill those pages and if there's nothing to write about. So I did the deep dive last week. If you haven't read the deep dives on MassLive.com, go ahead. I did the entire starting five, Jalen, Jason, Gordon, Kemba, and Daniel Tice. All last week's podcasts were deep dives. If you haven't listened to the podcast in the past week, all of last week's were deep dive podcasts into each of those players with a guest every single day to help talk about that. So this week, I'll still continue that. We'll talk about Marcus Smart. We'll talk about some of the other guys off the bench. We'll talk about Brad Stevens. So the deep dives will continue throughout the week. And so there's stuff coming down that road. So it's difficult to produce content out of nowhere, but it's not impossible. And we've got a bunch of creative people on this beat at Mass Live, and we're going to put our heads together and do something. This is a stream of questions from at Issa Joke. So it's like the Issa Joke section. So he's got four questions. I'll try to rapid fire my way through them. Do you listen to hip hop besides Millie's? Yes. I am an old school hip hop guy. I've told people many times here on the podcast. I'm in my mid 40s. So I was. My musical journey was kind of interesting because my parents are immigrant Greeks. So, you know, I started with this classic Greek music and I kind of like wound my way through popular things, had a little hairband phase when that was big. And as I started getting better at basketball, the hip hop culture was so tied into basketball. When I was playing out in the courts, I was starting to, you know, we played to like soundtracks. Guys were, you know, playing music out of the trunks of their cars and stuff. So I really started to get into hip hop. That was like It Takes Two was the big hit on the radio, and I really fell in love with that. And so I'm late 80s. So my formative years in basketball, when I started to get good at basketball, late 80s, early 90s. So Big Daddy Kane, EPMD, Kool Moe Dee. Those guys, Eric B and Rakim, like old school stuff. And then throughout the 90s, as I started to get into college and it progressed, and I met my friend Dell that I've talked about, who has, you know, he's the reason why I talk about suicide prevention a lot. He was a special person to me in part because he taught me so much about the roots of rap music. And so I learned a lot about the jazz and other forms of music that the rap music was derived from. So I really got deep into it. Now, I don't listen to much new stuff. Here's something for all of you younger people. Once you get to be my age, you stop really looking for new stuff. You kind of like what you like. And every so often, a new song will find its way into your rotation. Somebody will play something for you or whatever. Millie's came along. I like his stuff, generally speaking. I like his style. I think even though I'm not a fan of trap music and some of the trap beats, but I think he's really good. I think he's a really, really good rapper. And he's worked with some pretty good producers, and I like his stuff. But I don't listen to a lot of new stuff because I just don't go searching it out. The popular new stuff, I definitely hate. But there's definitely some underground or lesser known new stuff. But I definitely am a hip hop, definitely a hip hop person. Also, do you play video games? And if not, have you tried during quarantine? I used to play video games all the time. I forget what my last console was, but I've stopped. Actually, what was it? It was, the last thing I had actually was a Nintendo Wii. That was the last thing, and I got rid of that. And I have one of these little Nintendo, like the little tiny Nintendo things that you plug into your TV and you kind of play the, they have like 20 games preloaded. I play that from time to time because it's very on brand for a guy in his 40s. So go back and play Super Mario Brothers, but that's about it. So I haven't played any new 2K or anything like that. Did you get on TikTok yet? I have downloaded TikTok. I've not used TikTok. I don't plan on using TikTok, but it's a long quarantine, so who knows? And also for Miss a Joke, what team do you think could come out of the West? An actual basketball question. I'm especially now with time to heal, I'm going with the Clippers. Just with Paul George, time to heal. I mean, he's got 2 months to get through all those little nicks and bruises and, you know, nagging stuff. And, you know, you get Kawhi time to rest. I'm going Clippers for sure coming out of the West. So, all right, that was the It's a Joke section. I've got a lot more questions coming up. I'm going to take a break and come back with questions about Greek food, of all things. So stick around. More Locked On Celtics coming up next.
You are Locked On Celtics, your daily Boston Celtics podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Back with your anything but Celtics questions, starting with at Funky Celtics, who's got two questions. Can the post game be saved? I'm assuming that you mean post play, like low post game, and not the post game show, which I hope is good. And if you think that needs saving, please elaborate. But I'm assuming you mean post play, in which case, yeah, post play can be saved. It's just guys need to learn moves. They just need to learn how to play in the post. It's just like any other skill. It's been de-emphasized. It's an inefficient way to play basketball. However, it's a necessary way to play basketball sometimes. And there are times where getting a guy in the post is your best option. And maybe it's a low shot clock type of thing. And I get it. It's the numbers are what they are. The numbers say that post play is inefficient. And I believe it. I'm not going to be one of those guys. I'm not going to be Chris Webber. Just because I was a post player doesn't mean that I have to like rail on the stats that show that post play is inefficient. Part of the reason why post play is inefficient, though, is because players don't really try it. They don't practice it. They don't learn it. They're learning other things. They're learning how to play face up. They're learning to shoot the three. And that's all fine. It's all good. But now we're looking at how things are evolving. The NBA has changed. Basketball has changed. So now the everybody shoots a three type of thing has created defenses that switch all the time. They switch on everything, which means mismatches show themselves from time to time. And sometimes a mismatch when you've got a spread offense and you've got the ability to create a mismatch on the post, you should be able to learn a few moves. I'm not asking anybody to become Kevin McHale, but you should be able to learn a few moves to take advantage of that, you know, and how mostly it's how to feel the guy on your back and understand how he's defending you with him without being able to see him. That's like number one. When you've got a guy on your back, you can feel his weight. You can feel where his arm is. You're really kind of using your back as a set of eyes to create your next step. So not going too deep into it, but it's one of my passions because I grew up doing it. And it's great to be able to learn how to do it and master that, because you can take advantage of that. Guys who can work in the post quickly are really going to be that's a skill that's really going to help them. It's not going to be a primary skill. It's not something that I think you should do all the time. And I'm certainly not trying to be like, hey, Andre Drummond in the post, go do that all the time. Or Giannis should play in the post all the time. Like none of that. But skills like that are important. And guys who get the ball in the post and wait. Those guys, that's not good post play. If you get the ball in the post, you should be able to move quickly. And if you can't get a move off in 2-3 seconds, then work the ball around and try something else. Like your advantage is gone. So yes, post play can be saved. Hopefully by people learning more about it. Another Funky Celtics question, and this takes us into the Greek food portion of the podcast. As I said, I'm Greek. I'm immigrant Greek. My parents are immigrant Greeks. I'm not. I was born here in the United States. My parents came here from Greece. So what type of Greek food should we be eating that we don't know about? Now, here's the thing about Greek food, and I'm gonna fold in a question here from @AbidingDude, who also asked a Greek food question. What is the pinnacle of Americanized Greek cuisine if we couldn't pick the gyro? So the gyro is not Americanized, actually. You can go to Greece and get gyros. There's carts, there's stands, there's restaurants. They have the gyro. Like, that's a legitimate Greek thing. That's not like like Chinese food, where, I don't know, you go into a place and you order Kung Pao chicken, and you like go into China, like, you're not going to get Kung Pao chicken. Like, they're going to look at you crazy. Or whatever it is. Like, you heard the stories about how Chinese food is Americanized, and the actual Chinese cuisine is different. A lot of the Greek food I've found is traditional Greek food. Some of it's fast, like gyros or souvlaki. And if anything's been Americanized, it's like maybe the chicken souvlaki, which is generally not served in Greece, but I'm not saying it's not, but it's more of an option here. So, like, chicken kebab, beef kebabs. So there is no Americanized Greek cuisine, but like anything gyro, but like the souvlakis, your kebabs, like that's really where it if there's going to be an Americanized version of it, that's going to be it, because you can throw it in a pita, and that tzatziki sauce, that Greek yogurt cucumber sauce, is you're probably not going to find a lot of that, depending on where you go. So the Americanized, if there's an Americanized version of that, maybe it's like just some regular white sauce or something, or, but even that, a lot of this Greek, like, kebab stuff is, you can go into like the Turkish side. Greece is very uniquely kind of placed in the world, where the western half of Greece is very Mediterranean. The eastern half of Greece is more Middle Eastern. And, you know, you go to the northern part of Greece and you're kind of like, now you're moving towards Central Europe. You go to the southern part of Greece and you're at Northern Africa. So the influences are just vast for a country that's not necessarily huge, but where it is in the world, it's kind of like this four corners border into a lot of different cultures. And the influence over Greece has been great, because, you know, Greece was taken over by the Romans at one point. It was taken over by the Ottomans, the Turks. And there was, you know, during World War II, Germany took it over. And at some point, way, way early in Greece's history, the Greek Empire extended into Northern Africa. So the influence on Greek food is wild. And so you can go into a Greek restaurant and get stuff that's called whatever, and it can taste totally different than my mom. So going back to the question that at Funky Celtics asked, what type of Greek food should we be eating right now that we don't know about? I love pasticcio. Pasticcio is like a Greek version of lasagna. You've got the layers of the meat and the noodles, and at the top you have the bechamel sauce, the cream sauce, and it's baked. There's a very similar moussaka, which maybe you've heard of, but it's like an eggplant version of that, where instead of the noodles, you've got layers of eggplant. Pasticcio moussaka is just amazing. But my family, more southern, eastern Greek, makes it different than a northern Greek family would. Northern Greeks, more mountainous. Potatoes are bigger. The spices are different because the spice roots coming into that region come from a different part of the world. So it tastes a little bit different. So if there's one thing I want to make a distinction between Greek food is very different. And if you go to a Greek restaurant, whether you are going to a northern style Greek restaurant or southern style Greek restaurant, the same name dishes can vary, but pasticcio is My favorite, I could eat that stuff by the pound. When my mom makes it, it's just, I mean, it's problematic for me because I can eat so much of it that I eat too much of it. But there you go. Those are your answers. One more question before I go to break. It's from at Aaron Shelton 76. He asks, what's your exact salary before taxes? Well, Aaron, I make $1,000. I hope that's helpful in trying to get into this business. All right, moving on, we're going to get some questions about basketball. And my favorite question, I think, is the good guy versus the tough guy team. We'll do that next. Follow us on our social channels at LO Celtics on Twitter and at Locked On Celtics on Instagram. The questions roll on with Title City Boston. If you had to cover another team instead of the Celtics, which team would it be and why? I'm tempted to say the New Orleans Pelicans. Why? Because I love New Orleans. I go there every chance I get. It's really my favorite non-Boston city. It's a great place. Now, I don't live there. I haven't lived there. And I do understand that living in New Orleans is a bit of a challenge. And one of the downsides to covering a team in New Orleans is that there's so much to do in New Orleans that I'm afraid covering the team would not have my 100% undivided attention. But for now, living and working in New Orleans, that would be fun to me. And obviously, they have a good team. And I think covering Zion for the next 10 years or so, at least, would be kind of fun. So that would be an ideal situation for me. I lived in New York. I wouldn't mind covering one of the New York teams, although I might wait until Kyrie leaves the Nets before I do that. But frankly, to be honest, if there's any team, if for some reason I'm no longer covering the Celtics, it's just great to cover basketball. So any team, I would find myself enjoying my job. And, you know, even if it's in a city that I wouldn't even think of normally, I think I would find myself a way to have some fun because I'd be around basketball and talking basketball all the time anyway. And that's really my passion. So as long as I continue to do that, I'll be happy. At Evan Newell, who is your favorite non-Celtic player to watch right now? It's tough to pick one, so maybe favorite young guy and favorite vet. I just mentioned Zion. How can he not be one of your favorites to watch? I mean, he's just, you know, so I got a lot of crap from Jay King because I put out that tweet about Zion struggling. I said, for those of you who don't know, I said at the end of the Duke season last year that Zion's going to come in, he's going to have typical rookie struggles, and once that happens, a lot of people are going to be jumping off the bandwagon. And I got a lot of shit from people. Jay King likes to bring that up from time to time. I will say this, that he is actually having some typical rookie struggles. It's just that he is so damn talented that he's overcoming them by just dunking and, you know, through some of the things that they're doing in New Orleans. They're running sets and they're doing things to get him going to the basket, which is great. But he's just so damn good that the struggles, the typical rookie struggles, the being lost on offense, the being a step slow on certain things, it doesn't matter. And so that's just something I didn't think was going to be that huge right away. Got to go with Zion and John Morant. Like, those two guys are just great, like fun guys. And it's the same type of thing, like attack with reckless abandon. I'm hoping that John Morant maybe is a little more judicious in some of his attacks, but still a lot of fun to watch. As far as veteran guys, Giannis is in the same vein. Like, he's just a guy that, two reasons why I like watching Giannis. One, never know when he's going to do something jaw-dropping. Two, I like watching him evolve because he has that one skill, that shooting, that is so kind of, it's such a work in progress. It's fun to watch him grow. That's maybe the most fun part. And the same thing is going to be with Zion and these other guys. But like, literally watch him grow because he's gotten bigger and he's worked on his body, and it's been amazing to watch that transformation. But also on the court, his game, the way he's attacking, some of the things that he's learning to do, the evolution of his shot, like watching him progress from unstoppable force to even like beyond unstoppable, like that's wild to watch. So I do enjoy that whole process. At Aus Celtics fan, have you ever had a drunk Australian friend not quite make it to the toilet bowl and accidentally throw up in your bathroom? Yes, once. At Smiley Jogger, if you were to put together two rosters, one tough guy, e.g. Smart Beverly, and the other good guy, e.g. Hayward Steph, who would be on the team, which team would win, and by how much? Well, you named some good ones. So tough guy team, I started going through. I got Smart, Beverly, Montrezl Harrell, like Marcus Morris, Aaron Baines, Bam Adebayo, Jimmy Butler. The good guy team is Hayward, Steph, Al Horford. I think Giannis can be on there. Kemba for sure, like Victor Oladipo. I think what we're seeing, and I didn't even like really go much deeper into the construction of those teams, because I think what you're seeing is the tough guy team is tough because they have to be. Aside from like a Jimmy Butler, who I don't know if it's tough guy or a little more asshole-ish, but that is a trait of guys that generally have to make up for some of the talent that they lack. Like Patrick Beverley is a great example of, he's a guy that wouldn't be in the NBA if he didn't have the attitude that he had, the motor that he had. Marcus Smart's a more well-rounded basketball player, and I think would still be in the NBA. His passing and defense are obviously what they are, and now his shooting has come around. But these guys are all guys that have had to overcome the lack of talent of your Haywards, Steph, Horford. Like, those guys are nice guys. They're just like gentlemen. You know what I mean? Like, there's doesn't seem to be a mean bone in their body, but they're so talented that they didn't have to develop that thing, that edge. They do have competitive edges. I don't want to get this twisted. They do have competitive edges. You don't get to the NBA by just being, you know, without having that. But like Kemba Walker's in this mix. He's such a like nice, lovable guy. He's always smiling, but you see him on the court sometimes. He's talking his shit. I think the level of talent is a big, big reason for the development of that chip on your shoulder. Playing a certain way, playing with a certain effort. And so I would say the good guys, the happy guys, whatever you want to call it, I think those guys win easily. But it would be wild to see a team full of Marcus Smart type of players, you know, Smart, Beverly, Trez, Bam Adebayo, and like Jimmy Butler. Like, that team would just be maniacal. I think the good guys would win. I think they'd win by double digits. I think they might like go into the locker room and feel like they lost, just the way that the game would go. It would be fun to watch. But I think the good guys just get too much talent. Smiley Jogger also wants to know about a Charles Barkley update, which I don't know. I haven't heard anything, actually. I did a quick search and didn't see anything. So as of right now, I'm going to guess that he doesn't have anything. But it's hard to say. I think if he had something, then they might have announced something, but maybe he hasn't gotten his test back yet. Who knows? But that's a good question. I'm waiting to hear what that answer is. At Waleed Sadat, who are the best announcers in sports? That's tough. That's tough. First of all, I don't hear all of the announcers. I don't watch a ton of football anymore. I don't watch a ton of baseball. The best of the best, I mean, the top guys you hear, they're all great. They do not have grudges against your team. I'm sorry, they don't. But, you know, like, I'll go with some of the local guys. Like, Mike Gorman has been just legendary the whole time. Sean Grandy is an absolute legend. Mike Breen on the national level, I think he does a great job. I mean, even though he does his, you know, he's a Knicks guy and he grew up in New York, I think, I don't think some of the things that people say online about, like, oh, here's the Knicks guy saying something about the Celtics. Like, I think that he's like a Hall of Famer for a reason. But it's a tough question to answer, just because I'm sure there are so many good ones, like Bill Raftery, like on color commentary. Like, I like Doris Burke. Stan Van Gundy. Stan Van Gundy has been great, just in some of those TNT broadcasts that I've seen. I like him, but I also like some of the technical stuff that he talks about. So, all right, moving on. At Teddy Ballgame 83, can you dance the Hatsapiko, which is a traditional Greek dance? I cannot. I can learn it, but my parents never actually took me to the Greek school classes where a lot of kids, you know, when you're Greek, you go to the Greek church, they put you in these classes. They often put you in these things. They make you dance the Greek dances. I never had to do that. So thank my parents for that. But the Hatsapiko is, it's an interesting dance, but no, I'm just happy to drink my ouzo when I go to these Greek picnics, watch everybody else dance the Hatsapiko. And, you know, I do some of the other like easier things. And if I ever had to learn it, I could learn it, but I probably won't. All right. At M. Larson 1049, tell a story or two about some of your funniest interactions with other teams, players, staff from over the years. Well, over the years isn't very much, because this is like my first actual full season on the beat. So I've been covering this team for, you know, and now with the hiatus, really, you combine the two seasons, like a little more than one season. So I haven't had many interactions with a lot of other teams' players so far. The funniest thing that I've was, you know, Devin Booker's reaction when I asked him about Jaylen Brown called Aaron Baines, you know, crazy, and he laughed and was, you know, his reaction to that was kind of funny, which is not a great story for podcasts, but, looking back on it, the funniest thing that I've went through is like the Milwaukee Fiserv Forum security, which was just insane, like lockdown. Like, I had to have, like, it was easier for me to get my driver's license than it was to get into the Fiserv Forum for a shoot around. But I just haven't had that many interactions, otherwise. So one day I'll be able to answer that question a little bit better. At MT Pischel, Mike Pisch, my guy, used to work with him at WBZ. If you had to be quarantined at home with any three people, individuals, whom would you pick and why? All right, so I can't narrow it down to three. So Greg Popovich is one. Bill Russell is the other. Frazette's two, for obvious reasons. For obvious reasons. I mean, I'm sitting here, if I'm quarantined, I'm talking basketball with two of the best to ever do it. Now, I'm quarantined, so I want to talk about things maybe other than sports, but I still want to talk sports. So I was thinking Barack Obama, because obviously he's going to want to talk basketball. Bringing Barack Obama in brings in a political discussion that I want to have. There's a lot of fascinating questions to ask him about that. It brings in another person to talk about Bill Russell's off the court life, which is fascinating in and of itself. I think that would be just extraordinarily fun. But just, I mean, I, to sit there and just, I almost want to listen to them all talk. I want to throw Larry Bird into this mix because he'd be fun. I think that'd be just great. But I think I'm going to go with those other three. All right, last one. At JL Pulis. What's the story with Red's Army? What was your role and why did you leave? Well, my role was I created the site with Chuck McKinney. When we were working at WBZ, for those who didn't hear the kind of origin story, Chuck and I were teammates at Emerson, and he was a year ahead of me, and then he stopped playing to focus on his journalism career, and like his senior year was just mostly he focused on school. So we kind of fell out of touch, and we kind of got back together 2001 at WBZ. I got hired there to produce an overnight newscast. I was doing the 5 a.m. show and he was doing the 6 a.m. show. So we would get to work at 11 p.m., 10:30 p.m. and work overnight, which, you know, created a lot of opportunity to just like talk and, you know, there's not a lot to do. You know, you're creating a newscast, but there's some downtime and it's dead. It's overnights. So we were reading at that point, Boston Dirt Dogs was the big like Red Sox blog. And we kind of looked at each other. We're like, hey, let's do something like that for the Celtics. So we created a blog and we're like, what do we call it? So we said, well, what's a Celtics fan? Celtics fan is kind of like a follower of Red Auerbach. If you follow the Celtics, you follow Red Auerbach because Red is the guy. So if Red is our leader, then we're all Red's army. And that's how we came up with the name. So we created redsarmy.com, the voice for Celtics fans. And so my role was, you know, one of the two guys that created it and wrote every day. Like Chuck and I wrote every day. At the height of it, we would post 5, 6, 7 things a day, all while working. and, you know, eventually we hired people and paid people to write for us. Why did I leave? Because I got the job at Mass Live and I certainly couldn't keep blogging because once you get hired for Mass Live, all my Celtics content that I wrote had to go on Mass Live. So now I am a full-time professional beat writer. And so I left Red's Army and it belongs to Chuck now, basically. And, you know, look, Red's Army has evolved so much over the course of time, but it's, all I can say is I only have this job at Mass Live because I was too stupid to stop blogging. We had a lot of people who came and went. We tried Ted's Army for baseball and Ray's Army for hockey. And inevitably, family stuff got in the way for all of our, you know, eventually most of our writers and certainly the writers on those two sites. And they were like, yep, got to go. Chuck and I were just like, yeah, we're not going anywhere. We're just going to keep on blogging. It doesn't matter. And eventually, you know, my stuff went from the early days of just having fun and just, you know, whatever to, you know, seeing the page views grow. And you're like, well, I might actually kind of be able to do this. And I wanted to do it full time. And if it wasn't for Red's Army, I wouldn't be where I am now because I was waist deep in a TV career that I could have continued and done very well in, but my passion was basketball. And I continued to do Red's Army throughout all of it. Even while I'm doing on-air reporting in New York City, the number one market, you know, I'd come home and I would be either posting something when some downtime during the day, working on something from home, still doing the podcast from home. So everything in my life kind of was, once Red's Army came around, everything was just kind of slowly gearing towards this job at Mass Live and whatever my future brings. Like, I don't know what's the next step. Am I staying at Mass Live forever? Am I moving on from Mass Live? Are they moving on from me? Like, the future is so, we don't know what's going to happen, especially with this pandemic. You just don't know how the industry is going to change. So whatever it is, I'm pretty sure I'm going to still be doing basketball in some form until I can't do it anymore. And hopefully that day doesn't come for a long, long time. But I'm very happy doing what I'm doing. Like this is pretty good. It's not perfect. Nothing's perfect. And you learn that, but it's kind of wild to be going from city to city and arena to arena. And hopefully I get to go back to doing that some point soon. But being in these other arenas, seeing these other fans, seeing these other cities, seeing these other players, just being part of the ecosystem. You know, when I was a player, I wanted to make it to the NBA, and you learn pretty quickly that, well, I just don't have the talent to make it to that level. And I made it to a pretty high level and did more than most people do, but, you know, it wasn't the NBA. But this is how I got to the NBA. Like, I'm part of it. I'm part of the ecosystem. You know, this is how I did it. And now I want to stay part of it. And I'm happy that I'm here. And, you know, now the goal is to stick around and hopefully someday do enough good stuff where people kind of remember you. So we'll see. Hopefully we'll see how that day comes. I want to thank everybody for listening. Hope you've enjoyed this like non-Celtics podcast. Not that there was a lot of Celtics to talk about, but we'll continue the deep dives. That goes for the rest of the week. And then we'll see what happens next week. I've got some ideas. So stick around, subscribe. If you haven't subscribed and you're still listening now, go ahead and subscribe. Give us a 5-star rating. Give the show a good written review. You've made the show the number one Celtics podcast out there in all the rankings. So it's very much appreciated. So thank you. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Now the show's over. So tell your smart device to play the latest episode of Hollinger and Duncan.